Welcome to another ramble. Just going to try to keep you company for a little while today, but I brought some extra company with me. Hey, Peter, why don't you introduce yourself and let everybody know who you are?
My name is Peter Franson, and I make online content for Christian geeks. I've been doing that since about 2006.
Very cool. Okay, so first question about a Christian geek. Are they a geek because they're Christian, or are they a geek in addition to being Christian?
Yeah, I really dislike the branding that I've chosen to, you know, Christian Geek Central. And like when I'm asked about like the name or the branding or anything, I'm always quick to say, oh, I really dislike that. That Christian is like the modifier and geek is the core noun in that. It's like, I really want it to be like, we are geeky Christians, you know?
Oh, but that's not bad.
But yeah. I mean, that doesn't, you know, it doesn't flow.
It doesn't
as well
roll as well.
And, yeah. So,
yeah.
So does that, what was your question? Does that actually answer it?
No, that's perfect. Yeah. Are you a geek? Let's see. How did I say it? Are you a Christian in addition to geek or so?
Oh.
So the target market then would look something like, I mean, could we say like an Avengers fan who also is a believer or something like that?
Well, it's interesting because the term geek has changed the way it's used.
Okay.
Now, if you go back to the actual etymology of the word geek, it comes from circus sideshow performers who would have something just outrageously unusual or strange about them.
You know,
like
okay.
they would maybe as part of their act bite the heads off of small bats or animals or whatever, and they were the kind of like the weirdos or the freaks or whatever, and so that term then got applied to people who were unusual outside of kind of like the mainstream. And so for decades, like the realms of sci-fi and fantasy and comic books and video games, those were geeky things. They were outside of the mainstream. But now, in the last couple of decades at least, what used to be only in kind of geek culture has become mainstream. So what I would say is that, like, when I think of a geek, it's not necessarily what you're interested in terms of, like, if you like the Avengers, it's like how much you like the Avengers, you know, like if you're a real hardcore fan of the Avengers, you know, then you're a geek.
That's so true. Cause like, because a lot of the stuff that is what we would probably call geeky is pretty mainstream now, you know, whether it's DC or it's Marvel or whatever.
Yeah.
But it has popular appeal. It's not, you're not at the corners of, you know, the genre or whatever. So yeah, so that makes sense. It's the depth of the passion for it. It's that fire you see in the eyes at the Comic-Con of the kid that wanders up to your table. I've seen that. And I don't have that in abundance. I have it to some extent on certain medias, you know, certain authors, I don't know if it's not really genre level for me. It's, there's a few movies that I've kind of gone that deep on. But you're making me think maybe I shouldn't call myself a geek. I mean, I write sci-fi and I write some fantasy.
Yeah.
Do I qualify?
Dude,
I qualify.
Dude, yes, you're a geek. If you were actually like taking the pains to like actually write and publish sci-fi and fantasy. And I don't necessarily think it's necessarily about a felt passion, even though that's how I expressed it, just because this is an auditory format. But I think you can very calmly have a very acute interest in a certain niche kind of things. Like you might not be like a, you know, painting your face and going to conventions or whatever, but you might, for example, really search out and be interested in indie sci-fi that like no one else has heard of, but like you like these weird indie sci-fi movies that the mainstream audiences just don't go to the box office to see. So it's just in general, in whatever sense, it's something that's outside of the norm that makes you a geek. And dude, I think that fact that you're writing and publishing sci-fi and fantasy, you are totally a geek.
You know, I like what you said, like calmly, there's a calm depth to it. And I'm wondering if maybe, like if you have one axis that's maybe on the x-axis, which is like geek, non-geek, maybe there's a y-axis that is like extrovert, introvert. Like maybe there's a not kind of quite so extroverted geek that's a little bit more quiet about, although I would say probably most geek culture does tend to be introverted. I mean, is that safe to say?
Yeah, I would say more than half. I just say that anecdotally. I don't have any studies or anything like that, but I think like most of my audience and myself, even though I can like in the way that I kind of am now, I can flip a switch and I can be very talkative. I can be kind of like the life of the party, but while I'm doing that, there's always a little tank in the back of my mind that's slowly draining.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah.
And I fill up most of the time by being alone.
Yeah. That's a great way. That's funny you use that because I use the battery analogy, but it's the same concept as like, you know, and what really drains the battery for me is small talk with, it doesn't necessarily have to be strangers. Small talk with strangers is spending my bars on that battery, you know?
Yeah.
what's interesting is like in front of an audience though, where I don't have to actually do the interacting, I don't know. I think that's fairly energizing to me.
Yeah.
It's the mingling, I think, that I wind up kind of running from. And since you can't be on stage 24 hours a day, what it looks like to the average person is, well, he just doesn't like being around people. You know, he likes being in his writing closet or whatever.
Yeah. When in fact, it's like, listen, I would love to be around you, but you don't want to go as deep immediately as I want to go.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, so speaking of deep, like maybe give us a little bit of background. How did you land in this? This is a unique career. And by the way, a phrase I sometimes use, I can't remember if I told you this the other day when I saw you, but sometimes the phrase I use is I'm a missionary to the indigenous people of the internet. Mm. I think that may be even more true of you in a lot of ways. And so for those of you those listening that haven't seen your content yet, you have a very, I mean, like you're not hiding that you're a person of faith. You're not hiding your Christian beliefs. It's actually part of what you're doing, which makes you a little bit unique among other, I'll call them ministries that do this. There's some that kind of do the faith part incognito, but they just happen to be coming from a Christian worldview. But like for your stuff, you actually talk about theology sometimes. You do Bible studies and stuff like that. So you're in a very unique place in the content creation world. So I'd love to kind of hear how did that begin? Where did that come from and what drives it?
Yeah, you're right. It's pretty unique. And most, kind of like geek ministry type stuff that's happening online is pretty focused on outreach, looking to reach non-believing, geeks. And, very early on, my focus kind of clarified that I wanted to reach geeks who were already believers, but maybe were not very mature in their faith because they've not felt welcome at a church, or they, because of various reasons, maybe about their personality or about how others perceive them, they have trouble connecting at the church that they're going to. And so I wanted to provide a connecting point for them that could speak truth in ways that they could connect with, we could have common ground on the basis of our interest in sci-fi, fantasy, horror, comic books, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then give them opportunity to be equipped and to grow in some ways, but also along the way, always be encouraging them and equipping them to engage more deeply with the local church, because I don't ever want to be seen as a replacement. I think, unfortunately, it's very easy for a lot of people to just check out of local church attendance and just decide, well, I can just listen to podcasts or whatever. And that's just really, that's not at all the assumption that's made in the New Testament letters. The assumption is that we are building these, serving and building these purposeful relationships in local churches. So, but I mean, as far as like how it started, it started out with a focus on audio drama because my background, growing up and in college, was very much performance oriented, acting and vocal performance, singing, you know. And so I started out producing audio drama, and I suck at marketing, and my audience is already very niche and small.
Yeah.
And so there came a point where I realized, you know, I think that I can more effectively pursue the net aim that I'm going for with ongoing weekly content like podcasts and YouTube and stuff like that, then putting so much energy into audio dramas. I still do audio dramas as kind of like on a smaller scale, back burner type stuff. I'm always working on a little bit of something, but like the main focus switched over the years to like weekly content creation.
Yeah. Well, so when you did that, like what was the, I'm guessing the folks that you were then kind of connecting with and I don't know, comment section or whatever, like it probably shifted quite a bit, right? I mean, I don't actually know what the audience for audio drama is, but I'm pretty clear on that there's a sizable audience for geek culture stuff. So like what was that transition like?
Well, it's interesting because early on when I was promoting the audio dramas, I was trying to be a guest on other people's podcasts in order to talk about it and promote it and stuff.
Okay.
And one of those podcasts I was on early on, she told me after we were done recording, she was like, you know, you should do this. You should make your own podcast. And I was like, what are you talking about? What? And she said, yeah, you can talk about nerd culture, geek culture, and then along the way in each episode, you can plug your audio dramas. And so at first it started actually as a way to try and promote my audio dramas. And so I almost kind of like found that the audience that is my primary audience now almost right at the very beginning when I was trying to kind of promote audio dramas. And then my focus just gradually shifted more and more to the kind of online content stuff. But as to the piece you asked earlier about like what's the motive behind it, well, I mean, I know a little bit of what it's like to be a geek, because I mean, I am a geek, but I also know what it's like to feel misunderstood, and in particular to have people that are concerned, or maybe in some cases only quote unquote concerned, and actually they're just like wagging a finger at you, whatever. But I know what it's like to experience friction in connecting to other Christians when you are being upfront and just free in talking about the weird stuff that you're into. Yeah. And so I feel compassion for those that have maybe felt judged or misunderstood. And so that's really, it's, you know, my own experiences in some of my formative years that have led me to just have a heart for geeks that are, you know, misunderstood by others around them, and maybe in particular other Christians.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of what it's like to go to a church, just like a standard church, as a geek. And here's kind of the angle I'm thinking is most churches are, their programming is oriented toward kind of your standard family structure, where you've got like, you know, a couple of kids and a stable marriage and a normal schedule where you can attend on a, you know, on a weekend, on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And that does not always, I would guess that does not always resonate as well in some sectors of geek culture. That's not to say that geeks don't get married and have kids.
Yeah.
But there's a different rhythm. There's a different kind of, drumbeat maybe that goes on. And so like, I'm wondering from your perspective, what can churches do to welcome those that are in geek culture? Like we need all kinds, obviously, and it's easy to just kind of discount and say, well, we're just going for young families that are kind of like what we would consider normal.
Yeah.
How do we reach beyond that? How do we do a good job of welcoming those that are outside that circle?
You know, this might sound a little surprising. I honestly think it starts with biblical discernment.
Okay.
I think that there are many churches that have hesitancy about like certain genres like horror or fantasy that has like magic and sorcery and stuff in it, because they haven't really dug into parts of scripture that are really going to be speaking to these kinds of things, like in 1 Corinthians and Romans, when there's some talk about food sacrificed to idols and what do we do with that? Some people are sensitive to these things. Some people are not. I think that there's a lot of application there to navigating geek entertainment and stuff. I think the lack of thought and biblical discernment about imaginative entertainment has led to this this overly cautious mentality that really is born out of ignorance and just a lack of familiarity with these things and how geeks and fans actually interact with these things. You and I are close enough to the same age that you probably remember some of what was called the Satanic Panic in the 80s.
Was that when Dark Crystal was, or what was the?
Dark Crystal was probably of concern in some Christian homes, but like for me, I remember like Dungeons and Dragons was
Dungeons and Dragons, yeah,
you know,
yeah, definitely.
Like my parents didn't even want me to watch the Saturday morning cartoon, and then also, you know, like. There was folks on TBN that were saying, oh, now we've got these masters of the universe that are bringing the devil into children's homes and stuff. So there was just a lot of that kind of fear that was based on ignorance going around. So, gosh, I totally lost track of your question now.
But you're nailing it though. So the question is about like, because you also are, I believe you told me you're an elder at your church.
Yes.
Or a deacon or something. Yeah, an elder.
You've got to
think from a church leadership standpoint too.
Yeah.
How do you invite this into a church and so one of the things that seems like probably happens is in that, what did you call it? Satanic panic. That's a good example of something, a phenomenon that people can accidentally do and not realize they're doing. Like if someone who loves Harry Potter comes into your church and you say something negative about Harry Potter, which everybody has the right to like or dislike, but like if you make a big pitch about how awful it is, what you potentially are doing is inadvertently hurting the feelings of, maybe that's not even strong enough language. You're signaling to someone who is passionate about that you don't fit here.
Yeah.
You know, because you have a different, your conscience allows you to do a different thing than ours do. And I remember when I was a kid, my pastor, I was at a little Bible church pastor. He was preaching on that segment of Romans you mentioned, and he actually made the connection. He said, often we act like the person who can go to an R-rated movie is actually a lesser Christian, but they might be the more mature brother because they can do it in good conscience. Now, maybe not, but
maybe, yeah.
But the one who says I can't go to R-rated movies might be the weaker brother. And we need to remember that. And so sometimes in church, we tend toward what is the lowest common denominator. Because of course, someone that has had a past in Wicca, they might find Harry Potter difficult. That might be triggering for them. But then to apply that to anybody and everybody, that can actually ostracize people.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, have you seen that phenomenon happen within the context of church, or have you heard stories from your audience of those types of things happening?
More from my audience. I mean, when we started going to the church that I'm an elder at now, it was my family, my parents brought us to the church. And so I was just starting high school.
Okay.
And I would say, once we got there, there were fewer and fewer of those types of experiences with other Christians kind of questioned. There were still some, but not people in key leadership. They just had a foundation of good biblical discernment at our church. But absolutely, I'm still running into this in, my online content.
Yeah.
And most predictably around my horror movie reviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
that there will be Christians that will get in the comments. You know, that will, and some of them, they do keep it isolated to themselves, and they'll say like, you know, I just feel a conviction that I needed to stay away from this movie, you know, but other people will say, Christians need to stay away from this garbage, meaning broadly the horror genre, horror movies in general, or whatever.
Yeah.
And very rarely is there is the Bible actually brought into it, which I think is a little bit telling.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is, and of course it's quotes that are taken weirdly out of context and
yeah,
misunderstood. And
yeah.
But yeah. So and that actually, in some ways, fuels my motivation to continue doing what I'm doing, because even though, like, I have experienced moving from churches that were not as biblically discerning to a church that really does try to prioritize that, the rest of, you know, at least U.S. culture hasn't necessarily gone in that direction. I'm still surprised, like, oh wow, there are still some strands of Christianity, some branches of Christianity that are apart from biblical discernment enough that they're not, that their people are still arriving at these kinds of mentalities.
Yeah. So how do you define that? Like, how do you export that biblical discernment to others? Like, so much of what is happening when we discern things just seems kind of innate to the person and kind of hard to make a formula for others to follow. Do you have any suggestions on how to interact with, you know, material so that you can be more inviting to geeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on the individual and kind of what their specific reservations are.
Yeah.
So it would be hard to kind of suggest kind of a broad way of going about it. I think what I try to help people understand is that there are more than one ways of engaging with content. That, like, for example, in Acts chapter 17, unless I've got my numbers wrong, when Paul is speaking to the Areopagus, or at the Areopagus, he says, he quotes pagan poets.
Yeah.
And I find that really interesting. I highly doubt that when Paul was Saul and still a Pharisee, that he was spending his time familiarizing himself with pagan poetry. I highly doubt that would be the case. He was a Pharisee of Pharisees.
Yeah.
So what this says to me is that after he became a believer, he started familiarizing himself with what is a creative art made by people who have these horribly ungodly ideas. And yet he is intimately familiar with them to the point that he can quote them and isolate from them a part that spoke something that was true.
Yeah.
You know, and he brought this up and he says, even your poets have said this, they got this part right, you know? And so there was this connecting point that he was able to have with them because he was willing to go through that process of engaging with entertainment that has like a whole mixed bag and a lot of bad in it, so that he could find the nuggets of truth and use that as a basis for conversation. And I would submit that while certainly based on Paul's example, that's valuable for interacting with non-believers, that is just as valuable for interacting with other believers who enjoy that kind of content.
Yeah.
And there are things that are unintentionally, parallels in fiction and entertainment made by non-believers that however he does it, the Holy Spirit orchestrated that there would be parallels in there that we could draw from to explore meaningful issues of our real lives. And so, and man, when you're dealing with sci-fi, fantasy, horror, these are playgrounds for all kinds of themes about human nature and about right and wrong and justice. Comic books, man, especially if you're actually reading the comics, they are constantly exploring ideas of right and wrong and wrongs that need to be righted. That's what the superhero is largely about. And horror is totally a neglected genre by Christians because that is the genre where you are most likely to have strong declarations of the reality of evil's existence.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, your average seemingly harmless CW show for, you know, 20 somethings.
Yeah.
That is just talking about following your heart and things that maybe on the surface don't make you immediately alarmed, but they actually have really harmful ideas in them that also, you know, are not being addressed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, yeah, so I think it's just kind of understanding the different genres and how they can be leveraged both for conversation and for personal reflection.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You know, on the subject of horror, I think for believers, a lot of why they probably dismiss it is because they're avoiding the surface. And the surface is the gore and the guts, if it's got that, you know.
Yeah.
That is the surface, but that's not really the moral tale. I have a friend who's a horror writer, and he kind of opened my eyes to what is actually going on in virtually every horror. There's a certain structure, and if you watch, and I don't watch much horror, but he pointed out that the ones, if you pay attention to the ones that are going to get it in the end, the ones that are going to die, they've always transgressed somewhere in the beginning of the movie. And the ones who survive, now I can't say whether this is in every single horror movie, but he said in general, this is what the genre is doing.
Yeah.
It's showing that evil gets you if you transgress, you know, if you walk on the wrong, you know, hallowed ground or whatever it is. And the ones that escape, if someone escapes, they are, you know, they are usually the ones that you could call innocent in terms of the story. Now, I don't know if that's true in modern horror. Cause I'm just kind of unfamiliar with it, which brings me to another idea that when you were talking, I had is that I think one of the things that we do is we dismiss things that we have not dismiss. We speak disparagingly about entire genres that we have no real experience with. And I think that's when it gets that's when we're in danger of ostracizing someone who loves that, especially if we don't know anything about it. Like if you say, I keep using Harry Potter because it was just a controversy a number of years ago, you know.
Yep.
So if somebody says Harry Potter is satanic and you say, well, have you read or watched any Harry Potter? And they say, no. I'm like, okay, you should probably mention that when you talk about how satanic it is, because that means you are trusting some other person that told you.
Yeah.
You know, and so if someone watched something and said, man, this really triggered my Satan alarm, then I'm more likely to say, okay, well, I can see why you'd want to avoid that. But if if they don't have any experience with it, it doesn't mean they have to speak good or bad about it, but I think we just have to be careful about the things we don't really know. We don't really understand. And someone who knows believers that are in the geek culture and are enjoying these genres, I think can attest to the fact that there are very mature people who like that stuff, you know, whatever that stuff is. I like what you're saying with, you know, we need to have bandwidth for folks that are outside of what we consider the standard, you know. Years ago, my brother and I started kind of a Bible study for nerds. It was kind of a, you know, we did it in a comic book. We started in a comic book shop
cool.
And it kind of grew into a little thing that we would do on Tuesday nights. We'd get pizza and we'd talk about whatever the latest DC movie was or whatever sci-fi anybody was into. And we would always have a little kind of, you know, devotional thing as part of it. And it brought in a different kind of person than, you know, the Sunday morning service. So the fields are white for harvest. You know, there's lots of people that want to be invited in and are probably very open to coming to churches and services if they feel welcome.
Yeah.
Now there's another aspect of your ministry that I gather gets talked about occasionally, cause I've seen a few of your videos that touch it, but it doesn't seem like it's the main focus. But so as you know, the ministry that I'm with, Free Grace International, is identifiably Free Grace.
Yeah.
And I was, I was stunned when you came up to me at a Christian sci-fi and fantasy convention in Michigan this summer. This is how we met, by the way. I guess we didn't share the story, did we? Yeah. So Peter comes up to me and says that he was familiar with me and Sean, not because of our, not because of my fiction stuff primarily, but because of our work with Grace Evangelical Society, which is a free grace ministry.
Yeah.
So give us the story of that. Like that's, it's unique enough to be doing geek ministry. It's unique enough to be free grace, but to be both is just like a meteor fell from the sky. I mean, like what, how did that happen? How did you come to that understanding, and what does it mean to you?
Well, first I have to say that I felt the same way when I was listening to like old episodes of that podcast you used to be on. And like there was one episode where you were part of like the actual discussion instead of just the intro outro stuff you usually did. And like they said, now Lucas, you write some fantasy and some science fiction books. Is that something you want to talk about? And you were like, no, sir, I do not.
Absolutely not.
But that was like, I mean, I was driving or something like that, and I was like, what the crap? This dude's a nerd? Oh my God. So at some point, you know, my sister convinced me to go to this convention because I don't normally do, at least I don't display at conventions.
Yeah.
And when I realized it was this book convention and that you were a writer, I was like, okay, well, I got to see if there's some outside chance that he's going to be at this thing because he's a writer, you know? And so that was, yeah, so that was very just crazy and weird. But as far as
It was like when you came up and started saying free grace words. You know, we do these writers conventions, these sci-fi things, and that's separate from what we do with Free Grace. And like they never, the two shall never meet, you know, and here we are talking Free Grace. So it was, it was both exciting and also it took, I don't know if you saw, but on my face, it took me a minute to like put it together. Like, what did you just say to me? Did you just say Free Grace? So yeah. So how did you come to Free Grace? What was that story like?
Well, it was really at the church that I'm at now, which is Red Mountain Community Church in Mesa, Arizona. And I didn't know about like the label Free Grace.
Yeah.
And I wasn't particularly, I would say, trained up or indoctrinated in an alternate perspective, except for the fact that I think there's so much in Christian pop culture osmosis, in the way that Christians talk, in the phrases they use, that ended up kind of like giving me leanings toward what is often considered the opposite view of free grace, which is characterized by some as the phrase lordship salvation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there was just kind of like things that were in line with more that way of thinking that I had just been absorbing that no one had intentionally been telling me.
Yeah.
But then I would run into like some concerns or questions or whatever that would lead me to ask some deeper questions of those that were teaching at my church as I was in college in particular, and then also in my, certainly in my 20s, but even starting in my college. And so I started becoming more and more aware of, what really is, you know, I believe the most biblical way of understanding God's grace and how we obtain eternal life. And I think it's just a natural outgrowth of aiming to understand the Bible on its own terms. Instead of kind of like front loading your exploration of the Bible with the kind of understanding that is absorbed through popular lingo in Christian churches and Christian teaching. And so it was just kind of like a gradual understanding that I developed because of my church's Bible focus.
Yeah.
And the elders that founded our church, I think most, if not all of them, were free grace pretty much from the beginning. Certainly one of the founding elders who was my study mentor when I started making online content and I realized I'm going to do a podcast, a weekly podcast where I'm going to, you know, open up the Bible and try to, you know, inform some, you know, listeners about things in the Bible. I was like, okay, I need to be mentored.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, So I went to this elder in our church, who I knew a little bit already, and knew that he was, you know, proficient in Greek and Hebrew. And it's just like, he's a Bible nerd, if there ever was one, and asked him to mentor me. And so that went for 17 years. We met for about every 3 weeks, I think it worked out to, for 17 years. And so
would you bring like specific questions to him, or, I mean, how did that mentoring relationship work?
Well, it was a combination of reading theological textbooks and going through books of the Bible together.
Okay.
We did a couple years going through the Psalms. The first thing we went through was Norm Geisler's 4-volume systematic theology.
Yeah. Wow, y'all started heavy. I mean, that's
It was, I love the challenge of that. You know, I think early on, I compared it to like, man, I feel like a first level wizard trying to cast fourth level spells when I read this book. You know?
Wow.
In D&D terminology. But that was that, you know, that was wonderful to go through that together. And then, you know, other stuff beyond that. I don't remember all the different texts that we read through, but. So I think it was just in the course of doing that. And as I was, I remember one point when I was writing, one of my audio dramas where like I wanted to express something. And I, by that time, had come to believe in a form of the free grace position, but so much of the lingo, was still hanging on to me that I knew I was having trouble with this scene. Where one character was trying to convince another character, don't go down this dark path. Mm-hmm. And what my natural instinct was to have him say something along the lines of, can you really think that you're actually a believer if you go down this path?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, that's what I wanted to say, but I knew that wasn't right. And so I was looking for another kind of, counter perspective to the dark path and a reason to urge them not to go on the dark path. And so I was still, so it was just in a variety of different ways over the course of those 17 years that aspects of free grace became relevant and part of what we were exploring.
Wow, man, that's cool. Yeah. So you, it sounds like you would fall into a category that Sean and I have been kind of talking about and with others too, of what we think of as second generation free grace people. Like the first generation free grace folks, I think free grace has been part of, you know, theology since the beginning. It just hadn't been called that till a little bit more recently, but.
Yeah, you got like Hodges, I think, and maybe a couple other guys that were really kind of like the modern pioneers of like reviving an awareness of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so like coming out of the 80s, we needed those guys on the wall with the defensive, you know, watching the horizon, you know, and that was like the first generation. And so there's a certain mentality that comes along with that, which is like, we're on the defensive. We're ready to debate. We need to be, we need to be cautious about everything, but we have a lot of younger people that have kind of grown up in it. It sounds like you came at it a little later, but in a sense, when you were thinking theological thoughts, it sounds like it was already kind of the woven in assumption. I mean, is that safe to say that it was already there? You were just kind of sorting it out. You were already kind of part of a free grace group, it sounds like, or am I misunderstanding there?
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty accurate. By the time I was old enough to really ask probing questions and want answers. Well, I mean, I started actually asking probing questions earlier, but we were at a church. It was a Methodist church at the time that just the youth leaders there just weren't equipped to deal with Pater's weird questions.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, like, you know, as soon as we started going to, Red Mountain Community Church, there were suddenly youth leaders, even like on the volunteer level, that were able to get out a Bible with a Greek and Hebrew lexicon built into the back of it and start talking about this stuff with me. And so I think, I had inadvertently adopted some.
It's like you move from Tatooine to the Jedi Temple, you know, you come and they know the deep arts, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I mean, like by the time I was really full steam into this, stage of life where I could think on theological terms and ask those kind of probing questions, yes, the leadership there was already from a free grace perspective, and I was getting that.
Yeah. What were some of those, what were some of those questions that bothered you kind of early on? Like what were you coming up against that you felt like the lordship mentality just wasn't answering?
It's hard to remember. I think there was confusion over the way the Bible would use the word salvation. That's probably a big one.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, that's an elder paper that we're working on right now, to share with our congregation about, soto and soteria and yeah. the use of various forms of saved and salvation and as we see it in our English Bibles and not understanding how broad and context sensitive that stinking, those yeah. two stinking words
yeah,
are.
Absolutely.
You know? I saw
you had a video on that, I think it was posted 11 months ago. I'm not like a stalker.
Oh, yeah.
That just happens to be one of the ones that I looked
yep.
through. But that was a big part of it. And I thought that was particularly insightful because like the word saved, it is often translated like made whole or healed.
Yeah.
It's sometimes literally saved, but obviously from some physical thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, that was a good piece that you made there. I thought that was very, very useful.
Oh,
and most people, I'm guessing, because my experience has been, you bring that up with people, especially from kind of the background that I come from, that's new. That's not
yeah.
how the saved, I mean, saved means saved, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how it's treated. So.
Yeah. And we still, you know, this is something that kind of frustrates me, but like still folks in free grace circles, will, and I find this to be the case also at my church. And it's like, oh man, I really want to promote some clarity here, but we'll say like saved, when we are talking about, eternal life, obtaining eternal
yeah.
life and rescue from eternal separation from God. But then when we're talking about sanctification, we'll either say sanctification or sanctification salvation, you know, or,
yeah.
and I'm like, you know, man, there's something about, the way that we still in free grace circles end up using the word saved that we just assume that we're talking about eternal life. And I'm like, oh man, is there another way we can approach this?
Yeah. I've wondered if possibly, so another way it gets translated sometimes is just delivered, you know, you're delivered from something. And I've wondered if there might be a case for, I don't know. You know, you don't want to mess with stuff at the translation level, but I do wonder
yeah.
at the translation level if it wouldn't hurt to try to have some sensitivity when the word is being translated, like in the actual Bible translations that, hey, if we know that in the American vernacular, saved almost always is taken to mean eternal life, like would it be acceptable to say, hey, let's translate ones that we're confident aren't that into delivered? You know, or some other thing it's a synonym
yeah.
and it still works, but it moves it a little bit away from that confusion. So I don't know. So it's interesting. You said you guys are working on an elder paper. That's kind of a new idea to me. So you're writing something that then will, how does that work? Do you publish that to your church or
to the church website? For many years there have been elder papers up on the church website on various positions, you know, related to often kind of like contested issues, like the women in leadership roles in ministry,
yeah.
or I'm trying to think of what another one might be, doing, you know, risky missions, being dedicated to risky missions. I'm trying to remember. There's
an interesting
a couple others. But,
wow.
Yeah.
So would these, okay, so like if you were to prioritize like the church's doctrinal statement with a elder paper, is the doctrinal statement kind of like of higher order? And this is like like, you know how judges sometimes will publish opinions.
Yeah.
Like, is it something like that? Or like, is this, like, I don't know. How is it used in actual practice?
Yeah. Well, I should say that, like, I've been on the Elder board since the beginning of 2024, and so I'm still fairly new. The idea at our church is that elders, when they join the board, unless there's some sin issue or the Lord is calling them to relocate to somewhere, you know, I mean, the ideal expected scenario is you stay on the board until you age out at 65.
Oh, okay.
So I am pretty fresh. I am actually the most recent addition to the Elder Board. And so I hesitate to try and represent how the church views those. But what is my strong impression is that the statement of faith would be, the more etched in stone kind of thing.
Okay.
And the elder papers are going to be more like, this is, something that is ingrained in the leadership and has been for many years, but it's not part of our statement of faith. So it's not something that say like, that those joining the church for membership would be expected to 100% agree with, you know.
That's a good dividing line there. This is, okay. See, it's interesting to me because I'm also the youngest elder on our elder board of three. And both of the other elders have been elders before and they're older and they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing, like, we're a young church. We planted the church, I guess it's probably been a couple of years now.
Okay.
But we're wrestling with some of, we're coming to a point where it's like we have a doctrinal statement, but it's not highly specific. It's kind of generalized, and most evangelical folks could probably give it a thumbs up, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but traditionally we've been very free grace, you know, the background that most of us have, but we get new people in and we're like, oh, what is our responsibility at this point to try to onboard people into that? Is that even what we're supposed to be doing? And so we're kind of wrestling with it's sort of on the horizon, the same kind of questions. And this idea of elder paper might be an answer to that. So maybe offline sometime I'll ask you more about that.
Sure.
It's a highly, highly niche thing. You want to talk about niche thing. Elder issues is what this podcast will become. I don't know. Maybe not. But, so tell us a little bit about what your weekly, like getting back to your ministry, like like if somebody is following you on all channels possible, What can they expect to be coming out of your, say, your YouTube and your, you know, your, let's see, I think you have a blogger site, is that right? You have,
like I do, I don't know.
Some kind?
Yeah, that's almost kind of like a legacy thing that I've just kind of been keeping going. I don't know how many people are actually like engaging engaging with that.
Is YouTube the main spot where most are connecting?
Yes, although in terms of like average views, I get more average listeners to a podcast episode than to a YouTube video. Although I do get spikes in YouTube videos, certainly, from time to time, but I would say, like, if you were to go to patreon.com/spiritbladeproductions, that's kind of like the company name.
Is that the hub? Okay.
That's the LLC that I started back in 2006 with doing audio dramas and stuff. And Christian Geek Central is basically like an outgrowth of Spirit Blade Productions. And at the Spirit Blade Productions Patreon page, that's where kind of like all those things get dumped at the same time. So you're going to find like so on Mondays, that's when the video version of last week's Bible study goes up. on Tuesdays, that's when I post my reactions and commentary to the previous week's DC Comics that released on the Ultra Tier of DC Universe Infinite. So if you have a subscription on the Ultra Tier, you can track, you know, with that each week. And then Wednesday, that's usually just kind of where I put announcements or something. There's usually nothing on Wednesdays.
Okay.
Thursday's also kind of the same now. I used to put up gameplay videos on a separate gameplay channel, but I've kind of put that on hiatus for now. But sometimes I'll put an extra review on Thursdays. And then Friday is the main review content in video form that will go on the podcast. And then also on Fridays. So like the Bible study content, I record it usually in the middle of the week, and it first is a part of that Friday's podcast, and then I edit the video version together on the following Monday and put it up then.
So it sounds like, if I'm understanding right, it sounds like would it be right to say that the podcast is kind of the main piece of content that other things are drawn from?
Yeah, or that they are kind of like fodder for or something, yeah, you know? Okay. I mean, yeah, but the podcast also has a bunch of other elements to it. There's a what's really become a pretty beefy kind of Q&A section where I will give expanded responses to interactions I have with people via email or that leave comments under YouTube videos. I'll give them kind of a basic response, but then I'll kind of like give a more expanded response to select comments or questions in the podcast.
Okay.
And then, and, you know, other odds and ends. I track, I've got a news section of the podcast where I announce when a new book has been either released or, you know, revealed, announced, usually with a cover or something like that, that is written by a Christian, so that their worldview is in some way kind of injected into it.
Yeah.
That's okay. In the sci-fi, fantasy, or horror genre. So I kind of keep track of that kind of news notify people of that.
What are some of your favorites in that realm that you wind up? I mean, you start talking about fiction and you know, I gotta jump in on this. What are some of the stand out to you?
You know,
recently?
What's so funny about that is like, I used to really be full on into creating, fiction of my own in audio drama format with a clear Christian message in it for an audience of Christians, you know. And so you would think that I would really be into reading sci-fi fantasy horror that's by Christians or maybe even for Christians or something. But I just really haven't been for a long time. I think in the early days, of course, like many, I read Frank Peretti's This Present Darkness. I also read, I'm looking for it. The Chronicles of the Door by Gene Edwards is a really interesting.
I haven't heard of that. Okay.
It retells, key stories in the larger story of scripture from the angel's point of view.
And like
so it's got that kind of like existing in the spirit world kind of element, similar to what Peretti was doing, although without kind of like the suspense and menace. It's a little bit more philosophical, and there is some bits of suspense, and angels are reacting to these things we're overly familiar with in some neat and interesting ways. And
I'm seeing he was releasing. Okay, so he released 1992 to 1996. So that probably was on the tail of what I mean, because Peretti was probably 80. Was he 80s?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this probably was drawing from that. I'll have to look at that. I've not looked at that.
They're very readable and like they work well read out loud. And so like 1 year for Christmas, and the chapters are super short. And so 1 year for Christmas, I just attached one short chapter to every day of the calendar. So kind of like as an Advent thing.
Oh, that's cool.
I read through the book in that series called The Birth. Which is, which is really cool.
Man. Well, he's got lots of review. I mean, he's got a lot of readers because his first was there 16,000 reviews on? Yeah, he's got 16,000 reviews. So this was a major player. That's funny. I hadn't heard of it. I'm glad I'm going to dig into that.
I would say on that front that maybe is a bit of an answer to your question, Brent Weeks. I really enjoyed Brent Weeks' The Night Angel trilogy. Now, this is not written for an audience of Christians. In fact, I wondered if he was a Christian when I was reading these books. It's really dark, like R-rated type of violent storytelling, and characters are dropping F-bombs and stuff. It is a dark and brutal world. And yet, like all throughout this Night Angel trilogy, I'm like, this guy is weirdly paralleling stuff from the Bible, like a lot. It's like hugely, in this hugely rich way. And I'm like, I don't know how you do this depth of paralleling without being a Christian. How are you this knowledgeable and this interested in the Bible without being a Christian? But yet he was so counter to what you would expect from Christian writers. And so I reached out to him and I was like, hey, I'd love to have you on my podcast and talk about what I'm seeing in your writing. I don't know if you're a Christian or not, but I'd love to talk about where this is coming from. And I just got crickets. And so I just gave up on that. It was like a year later he got in touch with me and he said, hey, I want you to know I've been thinking for a long time about this and I'm ready to come on your show now.
He,
although he was open about his faith in his, you know, with his people in his real life, he hadn't really, as a part of his public branding and stuff, mentioned the fact that he was a Christian. And so it was on my podcast. That was the first time that he opened up and talked about that. And that was just audio, but you can actually, if you go to the Christian Geek Central website and put in Brent Weeks, we've made a video version of that years ago. We made a video version of that, and it doesn't look very special, you know, but you can hear that entire interview where he is, I can sense a little bit of nervousness in his voice.
Really?
as he says, well, that's because I am a Christian, you know.
And then, did you know that before you actually recording, or
no?
Oh, wow.
No, okay. I was learning it just as the
Man,
audience is,
cool.
You know. And so I asked him, you know, about like, wow, so tell me about like, did you consider going to a Christian publisher, like with all of your F-bombs and stuff like, so it's a really fascinating conversation that I'm so blessed and grateful to have had, and people continue to find it and go back to it. And I'm so glad they found it useful, because his publishing journey, is one to, I think take note of as any Christian writing in geek fiction genres is considering what path they might want to take.
Yeah. Wow. That's super cool. Yeah. I need to put him on the list too. That's so Brent Weeks, Night Angel. So I guess for our audience, I probably should say I'm not endorsing it because I haven't read it.
And yeah.
It
yeah.
doesn't sound like you're exactly endorsing it for content, but just the parallel for the faith is definitely
yes.
present there.
Yeah. Man, yeah. For sure. Cool. Yeah. I mean, it definitely, there's dark stuff. I mean, there's characters that, I'm trying to remember if actually there's a description of a rape scene, but there is a character who you find out they were sexually abused when they were younger, and it left major scars and effects on them. And so it is a very, very dark world. But part of me wants to say, well, if you're comfortable reading every book in the Bible, I think we can probably handle this
book. There's definitely horror and terrible things that happen in the Bible. You know, this brings up a subject that it occurs to me you are the right person to talk to about. I brought this up with various people, and it hasn't really taken seed, but I'll pitch this idea to you. So you're reviewing stuff that's not always labeled Christian. Sounds like maybe sometimes you'll look at that, but you're reviewing stuff that's mostly secular, right?
Most, yes. It is the rare exception that I do review something that is made by Christians.
Yeah. Okay. So there is, I think, broad confusion on what the label Christian means in terms of media. And I think there's maybe four or five different things that people mean. One is, and you hinted at it just now, that some people think of Christian media as it just doesn't have cuss words or sex scenes.
Yeah.
That's what some people mean. Some people mean that it has an overt message, you know, messaging, preaching, you know, sharing the gospel, evangelistic or discipleship. Another meaning is that it's just made by a Christian.
Yeah.
And nothing is discernibly Christian in it. It's just made by a Christian. And then the fourth is a kind of an offshoot of that one, which is it comes from a Christian worldview, but it's kind of a subgenre of that. It's not necessarily identifiably Christian other than, you know, maybe monotheistic or some kind of worldview. And I feel like there are Christian publishers that are really muddying the water by kind of doing a bait and switch where they're marketing as a broad market, you know, broad market material that anybody can read, but then a portion of their audience are Christians who know it's Christian, but it's sort of a secret, you know, and I don't know. That bothers me. It bothers me because it feels a little disingenuous. It feels a little bit like we're not saying what we're doing. But then on the other hand, it's like, it's our art is art, and you know, whatever worldview you're making. And so maybe it's sort of a sub problem of just this idea of Christian music or Christian publishing or Christian whatever, Christian McDonald's. Maybe they're going to have Christian restaurants next. I don't know. But I don't know. How do you think about all of that stuff? Like, what is that just outside of the realm of what you're focused on?
No, I mean, like, it's interesting. You mentioned all those different versions of what could be called Christian fiction or whatever, you know. And I don't interview authors really anymore. It's very rare for me to do that, but I used to on a pretty regular basis interview Christian writers about their work and stuff. And that was one of my first questions. I presented almost the exact same categories you did and then asked them toward the beginning, so where does yours fall, you know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's so many different variations. There's such a spectrum. And unfortunately, people can get really locked in and assume that it's going to be one thing. And then when it's not, be really upset.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. So.
And so you'll see that in the reviews. It's like somebody's getting bad reviews. So I've got a buddy, I'm not going to say who he is, but I got a friend who wrote a very Christian sci-fi book, and it's not bad, but he's gotten some reviews from, it seems to me, people that thought they were going to read a secular sci-fi book, and they get into it and it's got like the gospel in it, and they're kind of like a little bit mad. You're like, oh, what is this? I didn't.
Yeah.
And that's really on the publisher, not on him, because the publisher decides the cover, decides the title.
Yeah.
It decides that we're going to kind of hide the fact, you know, and I think it was a mismatch, you know, and so like I've proposed, not to anybody that could actually do anything about it, but I've proposed that we actually have some kind of tagging system.
Yeah.
So that the reader knows, because your best experience with the reader is for them to know what they're getting into, to not know the ending, but to know the journey is, it fits with their, what they're comfortable with or what they're looking for, you know, and so, because it's so sad if you get bad reviews just because the marketing drew in people that really weren't your target market in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Stuff like, you know, we've got coming of age stories. Well, how about a coming to faith story? You know, and then we know.
Oh yeah. See, that's a whole subgenre.
You know,
that's
it's not a spoiler in a review to say that such and such movie is a coming of age story. And you know, the basic beats, the basic kind of growth moments that they're going to have. And so I think that similarly, Christians could say, this is a blank, blank coming of faith story, blah, 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 blah. And that's not a spoiler. And it's very upfront, you know.
This is why I knew I needed to talk to you, because that's a great idea. So that's not like that's like something you could actually just put into your book description. I mean, that's thinking along the right brainwave there, because it's like, it needs to be, at least, it needs to flow with the kind of marketing, the marketing materials that you already see with content.
Yeah.
I was imagining like some sort of like stamp that you put on the cover, which is so stupid, you know,
that could work too.
Well, I don't know. Like, but there's nothing else like that. But what you just said, you just took something that is already exists and adjusted it. And I think that's a way better. That's a much better. This is why you do what you do, because you got good thoughts on these things. But that's like that phrase. I could use that phrase in my marketing for some of my books, because that's what they are. They're people realizing that they need faith or whatever.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to develop a few different taglines like that for these different genres. So I've started to put them in something like that in, you know, in my book descriptions because I don't want anybody to be confused.
Yeah.
Like my most successful book so far has been called Missionary to Mars. And so nobody's really confused about what that is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like,
yeah,
that's pretty on the nose. And honestly, I mean, I got suggestions from an actual publisher guy that said, that's too preachy. You need to change it. And I was like, I would rather not take the risk of someone that's not the target reader reading it and being upset. I'd rather lose a little bit off the front end. And so anyway, hey, I just looked at the clock. We've been going an hour, which means we probably should wrap it up.
Okay.
I do want everyone to, I want everyone to know how to get to your materials and the things you're making. You said it a couple of times, but say it again. Give us what is the website? What's your channel so that folks can come find you?
Well, I would basically say there's a link tree that you can find at ChristianGeekCentral.com. ChristianGeekCentral.com. That'll get you to the Patreon page. That'll get you to the podcast. That'll get you to my audio dramas if you want to check those out. ChristianGeekCentral.com. That's the place I would send you.
And I will tell people that I follow your stuff. So this is an endorsement from me. I follow your stuff, and I think I'm even a Patreon supporter now. I love what you're doing.
You are. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. And I'm not doing that to brag. I just, you know, it's just, I feel like we need this type of connection with folks. And the fact that you're focused on discipleship, I think there are a lot of, and be, you know, since we come from a free grace perspective, it's like a lot of people got saved when they were young and they're still saved, but they need to grow. And yeah. I think that is a brilliant, that's a brilliant aspect that you've noticed in this, you know, in this culture. And I'm behind it, man. I really love what you're doing. So
thank you so much.
Yeah. So this has been a lot of fun. I hopefully maybe we can do this again sometime soon. And
yeah.
Maybe when you have a really spicy review of something, I should get you back on here and we can promote whatever your review is or whatever. So
that'd be fun.
Very cool. All right. Well, Peter, thank you so much. And, we will see you sometime in the near geeky future.
Great, Lucas. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, man.